You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You know what that music means. It's time for a very special episode of DLC. This week, all week long, DLC means your daily live coverage of E3. We're here every night of the show. We've been here last night, Monday night, tomorrow night, tonight, talking about all the biggest games, all the biggest announcements. We were on the show floor. I do not have my partner in crime, my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, Christian Spicer, here today, but I have a couple of guys who I'm very happy to help me out. And this show, as you know, is only possible because of our sponsor, Squarespace. Squarespace! They're the ones who made that possible, bringing the show to you completely free. And while I do not have a Christian Spicer tonight, you are going to get two Jeffs. You may have gotten two Jeffs a little bit last night if you downloaded the show immediately, and I apologize for the reverb, but it's fixed. You had a little crazy extra Jeff in your show last night. Yeah, like that. But now we got the right extra Jeff in our show. Jeff Mattis. That's right. I'm so happy to have you here. Jeff Mattis, of course, from Weekend Confirmed, now a voice on the game Narcosis, which is going to be this awesome underwater crazy survival horror game. So happy to have you, Jeff.
I am so excited to be here. I'm sorry it took so long. It's an absolute pleasure.
And we also have another guest, a first-timer, a guy I'm so excited to have on the show, Matthew Burnside, formerly of the Indoor Kids podcast on the Nerdist Network, gaming insider, E3 attendee. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about today. Another exciting day on the show floor. I saw a ton of games. I'm sure you guys saw a ton of games. We're going to get audience call-ins as we have all week long. If you are listening live at 5by5.tv/live, you can call in at 512-518-5714. I want to hear what people are excited about from E3, what games they want to know more about, any questions you guys might have or things that you've seen on live streams that you want to talk about and gush about. We want to hear from you. So 512-518-5714. And in fact, I think there's actually somebody on the line right now. Hello, is this Mark Edding from marketing?
Hey, Jeff, big fan of the show. Just got to say, stay on message and then shut up.
Wow, I'm so glad Mark was able to call. Mark, could you put Christian on? I heard Christian is there with you.
Hey, what's up? Yeah, Mark's got me tied up here. Apparently I went off message and he's not letting me leave.
So we're sad you couldn't be with us here, Christian. I know you're driving right now. You're driving down to San Diego, is that right?
Yeah, we're doing a special one-off improv versus stand-up show in San Diego tonight. So I'm driving down to do that.
Very cool.
Well, this is awesome that you had a chance to call. Is there anything you wanted to quickly mention that you saw at the show floor today?
Counter Spy. Holy moly. This is my game. This is ex-LucasArts devs, ex-Pixar people coming together to make a Mark of the Ninja meets James Bond meets humor from Telltale games or old LucasArts games, side scroller, shooter, gorgeous art style, and it's PS3, PS4, and wait for it, Vita!
The Spicer trifecta.
Yeah, it's cross-buy, cross-save, and just gorgeous. Man, I stumbled into it at the IndieCade and then had a chance to actually talk to the developer of the game, who I think is going to try to call in tomorrow, so we'll have more info. But it comes out this summer. They don't have an official date or price point, but be on the lookout for this game. It's awesome. And then the other game that two other games quickly that I spent time with today were Disney Infinity Marvel Edition or Disney Infinity 2.0. Man, love the art style of that game still. I think the Marvel characters fit in that universe with that, you know, unified art experience they have so well. I think it's a shame that the game doesn't seem as fun as Lego Marvel does, for example. But the art style is great. The figures look fantastic. I'll probably own figures of that game, whether or not I buy the game. And then I played Gauntlet, which is coming out, I think it's September, on Steam. And I don't know their other, I don't have notes, I'm driving. It's by the guy that made Magicka, and it feels like Gauntlet. They're calling it a remake of Gauntlet. Lots of fun. I think it'll be really fun with four friends versus three randoms on the show floor. but beautiful. If you know the Magicka guys in that game, it's very much in their wheelhouse. And, you know, coming out at, I think it's $20, is how I think that game competes versus like a Diablo 3, which, you know, different but similar in many regards. So, but awesome. I had tons of fun today playing those games.
Cool. Well, we'll have you back on tomorrow. We'll talk more about that stuff. And I'm super excited if the developer of Counterspy can be on the show as well. Well done.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Have a great show. Love you, Jeff. Jeff and Matt, have fun. I'll talk to you guys later.
All right.
Love you too,
safe,
Christian.
Buddy.
Drive safely.
Good talking to you, buddy.
All right, guys. Now that we got that out of the way, we can start having some real fun. Matt. Let me hear what you are most excited about so far at your E3 experience. What games have you seen that have gotten you jazzed?
You know, there's been four games that I got to experience that are phenomenal, I think. Number one, Evolve.
Mm-hmm.
That four-player co-op against one other person is very unique. The classes, the support, all that stuff that's there, it's not like your traditional shooter. You really do have to work with your team. And in a fun, inventive way, outside of your normal like teamwork, like a Battlefield or a Counter-Strike, something like that. Really, really like it. The art, fantastic. The graphics are just gorgeous. Really, I can't praise that enough. I really had a fun time with that.
Which characters did you get to play? Did you play the hero or the monster? The heroes.
I played a hero. I played support. It was, I forget the name of the character, but it's one of the new ones. He's
was it the
a robot?
Yeah.
You get to throw your head off, and
yeah,
it becomes
cool.
A UAV. It's awesome. It's
so
good.
You can fly your head around the map and check out and spot the monster. And if you spot him using your head, you have this time limit until your head, I guess, explodes or whatever. And while you're flying it around, if you manage to locate the monster and lock onto him, then everybody on your team gets to be able to track the monster. So it's really helpful for all the other team members who are basically just running on their map trying to find where the monster is initially. It's a really cool idea, and the fact that you're playing as a robot is really, really slick too. I think they're doing a lot of interesting things with the character classes and making variety within each class too. So even if you're saying, hey, I want to play a medic, you have multiple options of medics that actually play differently from one another.
Yeah, and apparently we're only going to see more too. I think they've got a whole another set of four characters that they haven't even shown off yet. I'm really excited to see what the finished product is going to be. I think everyone is going to really enjoy it. And I think it's going to shake up multiplayer quite a bit. I think you're going to see a lot of studios start to take notice of that quickly. It's really fun, really neat.
it's kind of surprising to me that already there's two big games at the show that are this 4v1 concept. I talked a little bit yesterday about Fable Legends, which is basically the same kind of game. I mean, the V1 part of it is different. You're not playing as a giant monster. You're playing as all the monsters. You're playing as this crazy omniscient dungeon master. But the basic idea is the same in the sense that there's four people who all play different classes, and they're going up against one person who has the potential to really mess up their lives in a big way. So yeah, I think this is a really fun asymmetrical multiplayer idea, and I think that, as you said, a lot of studios are going to run wild with that in the coming years. It's cool. Jeff, tell me something that you saw today that you were all jazzed about.
Oh, well, the first thing that I saw, and it's probably still my favorite thing that I saw, and it's not going to be very surprising to anyone, but I managed to get into the Witcher 3 Wild Hunt live demo.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge fan of that series in general, but holy cow. they're really doing a lot of stuff to take it sort of to the next level. I mean, they were talking about, you know, open world stuff. Did you have a chance to check it out, by the way?
Yeah, I went to the – I don't know if it's the same thing. I went to the 45-minute thing up in the private meeting room. Yeah.
That's what I saw. I was really, really impressed with it. And honestly, like – so it opens up with the Witcher tracking a griffin. So it's a monster hunt. And there – you know, you get a sense of how really big the world is. And it's you know, about as beautiful as The Witcher 2, sort of ratcheted up about – 50%, I think. It's absolutely one of the most beautiful things I've seen. It's definitely something that I'm going to consider upgrading my PC for, before it comes out beginning of next year beginning of next year, February
24th, yeah. I think is their date.
Yeah, absolutely stunning. But what really blew me away about it was, you know, that they go through the hunt, the griffin hunt, which is absolutely fantastic and great. It ended with a cinematic, and I'm not sure that that's, you know, representative of the final how the battle's going to play out once the game comes out. Right. But then they take you into one of the major sort of town hubs, and the scale and the size and the number of people doing their own thing. I mean, apparently all these NPCs have their own AI routines that they run, from beggars and peasants all the way up to guards. And they, you know, it's not just them standing in a single place, you know, 24/7. It's, you know, the whole living, breathing world thing that gets thrown around way too much. This is sort of one of the times when I feel like it's really, really applicable. You know, it's not just marketing speak. It's like, wow, these guys are paying a lot of attention to detail here.
Yeah. And there's so much detail. As you said, that vibrant world that just feels teeming with life and animals and all kinds of crazy stuff just happening. And, ambient discussions as you walk by, little kids going, I'm going to play as the monster. And, you know, all this feels alive as you kind of walk your little horse through it.
No, yeah, absolutely. Well, it's sort of overwhelming in a good way. Like I look around and looked around and saw all this stuff that I knew was going to take me. I mean, I'd spend, you know, 10 hours just in the hub running around, checking everything out, talking to people. It's very, very impressive. Very impressive indeed.
Yeah. And then I'm sure you saw the same thing I did, where then he goes off on this other quest and has to find that little boy, Johnny, who is not a little boy, he's a creature, but he looks like a kind of a 10-year-old boy. Did you see that whole section?
Oh, no. They said that they were running a little short. Maybe they so this was post the town, because they kind of ran us through the town a little bit. He's like, okay, well, let's go to the other side of the town and we'll get a look at a view. And, you know, it was all great, but it still ran about 40 minutes, 45 minutes. Maybe we just got short.
Maybe they just... did something different because I won't recap it because I talked about it at length yesterday. But it is pretty amazing, and it really highlighted the writing in the game, which I think is just excellent and interesting and not not, you know, your typical just give me the quest and I don't care about it. It really creates interesting story. I mean, this is a franchise that's built on a novel, series of novels. And, you know, it's rich and interesting. And yeah, I every time I think of a game that I'm blown away by, I go, well, but was it better than The Witcher 3? I'm not sure that it was.
Right. Well, and it just makes me even more excited to see something about Cyberpunk.
Yeah.
Finally, you know, I mean, this studio is just incredible in my opinion.
Yeah.
Witcher 3 is definitely sort of top of my list. I've got a lot more that I want to get my hands on. But in terms of AAA top tier stuff, that's right up there.
And I'm so excited about the combat system too, because especially post patch, the Witcher 2's combat system got that interesting overhaul, and I really think they're putting a lot more thought and not just thought but experience now that they've tried these two versions of the combat system in Witcher 2. I think it's really going to be the next maturation of that, you know.
Yeah, something I noticed, you know, watching the combat sequences that they played live, the animations, the range of animations, and not just you know, sword movements and swinging and stuff like that. That was all really impressive too. But just the subtle things from, you know, going from a roll and then watching him stand up and sort of shuffle his feet sideways because he's circling around an opponent very slowly, and then that picks up into a lunge, and it's all. You know, it wasn't 100% perfectly stitched together, but it was pretty damn close. And, you know, sort of head and shoulders above most other, you know, melee combat systems I've seen, just in terms of how it looked, how the animations worked.
Yeah.
So awesome.
Speaking of animations, another game that I got my hands on today, and I didn't even know it was playable at all, but I managed to make my way into it. The Order 1886 has.
Tell me about that.
Oh, yeah. It's gorgeous. I mean, I could talk for the entire show about how great the graphics are and how phenomenal they made the PS4 seem so impressive already. But there's so much subtlety in the animation of, like, when you're taking a step backwards, like he's clearly glancing over his shoulder, making sure that he's not tripping over anything, like all these little tiny small things that it's going to make going back and playing an old game feel tiring. Yeah. I think this time next year, if I play a game that came out a year ago, I'm going to roll my eyes at it. It's very, very impressive. And what they can do with the, it's a very grayscaled game, but you see everything. There was not a single moment where I was finding anything hard to see.
It's interesting that you say that, because I really have had a similar thought. There's this demarcation line between games that it seemed were started last generation and are being brought into the next generation. They still look great, but then there are these games that are all the sort of 2015, mid to late 2015 games and beyond that you're seeing at this E3 for the first time, that look like they were started on this generation and are visually just don't compare. I mean, there are so much. There's a level of polish and it looks. Some of the games look almost painterly, and these are like 3D, you know, first person shooter type games. It's really the lighting that is going to make the giant leap forward in this generation, I think.
Oh yeah, absolutely. The lighting in this game is phenomenal, and the reflections and everything like that. It really does bring out so much.
What was the demo about? I mean, was it like what they showed at the press conference? Or was it a series of button presses, or was there more to it than that? Or what did they show exactly?
So it was basically a two-stage demo. First, I got to just sit down with one of the developers as they played through the part that was at the Sony press conference, where you're inside of that hospital and that, I'm terrible with fantasy terminology. Basically that werewolf, is coming after you. But they took the time to stop and let you appreciate the art assets, as well as the ample times that you could have died and all the great death animations that are going on there. But that wasn't really different. But what I got to play, I'm pretty sure was what they actually used to debut the game last year. And last year, I remember when they showed that off for the first time, I was instantly into it. I think that like Jack the Ripper-esque time period is a really rich time period to start pulling from. And the like technology behind the weapons seems very cool. But I thought, as I think all seasoned gamers become very skeptical, you know, was it real? Was it real gameplay? Was it all just for show? But I have to say, it felt like I was playing a cutscene. It was so impressive. And there are no cutscenes. Every single thing in there, there's no video player in their engine. It is entirely inside, like live rendering constantly, and you cannot tell the difference between gameplay and when they cut to camera angles.
It's like what Naughty Dog is doing. I heard confirmation that the Uncharted trailer that they showed was all in engine as well, and they had worked really hard to make it 60 frames per second, and you kind of just assume that it's a CG trailer, but it was in engine, and I think that's amazing. So what I got, the impression that I got last year was that it was much more of a team-based shooter type of situation. No,
not at all. It is entirely a single player game. There is no multiplayer in it whatsoever, which I like there being a line sometimes between a multiplayer experience and a single player. Like with a game like Titanfall, I don't need a single player campaign. That's just me running around fast with my friends, shooting a bunch of stuff and stepping on people with robots. And a game like this is, they seem to be very careful, giving you a nice, rich story, a really cool setting, a great atmosphere. It's not. You play that one guy, that guy that kind of looks like Daniel Day-Lewis, and that's it.
Interesting.
But there's definitely times where the NPCs, they've got your back. But you're definitely you're the one.
Oh, did we lose him?
Oh,
I think the NPC's got his back just then. Hopefully, we can get Matthew back. But I can transition into the first thing that I saw today, which was Lords of the Fallen, the new Namco game that looks like a Dark Souls game. It certainly plays like a Dark Souls game. And now that I'm Mr. Dark Souls, all of a sudden I've done a 180. And I don't know if you've heard, Jeff, I love Dark Souls now. I know.
Good.
It's crazy.
Good.
Yeah.
Yes.
I finally gave it a chance and I loved it. Oh, maybe we'll get Matthew back.
There we are. Sorry about that. My Skype crashed.
That's okay. No worries. I kind of transitioned into Lords of the Fallen, the Namco game that I got a chance to see this morning. And
is that the one where Piggy gets the conch
no, that's Lords of the Flies.
Right.
This is Lord of the Fallen.
That popular dance, right?
Oh, man.
Which would also make a great co-op game, and maybe not.
You ready for Lords of the Dance? Don't give the Just Dance people any ideas.
Right. Oh, gosh.
Anyway, Lords of the Fallen does, in fact, play exactly like a Dark Souls game. I mean, all the controls are identical to Dark Souls. You hold your shield with left bumper, strong attack with right trigger, soft attack with, or faster attack with right bumper. Everything is the same. If you die, you have to go collect what it calls your experience, which is your souls after death. The biggest difference is that when you trigger what in Dark Souls is a bonfire, in this game is some sort of like levitating rock formation, basically a checkpoint. In Dark Souls, if you trigger it again, all the monsters respawn. In this game, they do not, which is kind of a nice little break from that stress. And that was one of the big things that they said is that, we decided not to make quite as stressful, that you can actually go back to the checkpoint and replenish your health and your potions without re-triggering all the monsters. But the monsters are just as challenging. The combat is just as challenging. If you had said, hey, this is Dark Souls, you know, and I didn't see the title, I would have thought, oh, cool, more Dark Souls. So it does feel like that, which is a good thing. The biggest – and it also looks great. I mean, this is next gen. I played it on PS4. They had playing on PS4 and Xbox One. I played it on PS4. It looks gorgeous. It doesn't look more gorgeous than Dark Souls 2 on PC on full settings, but – still, that's also gorgeous. So very moody. The enemies are really cool, intense. There was one moment where I walked down to this courtyard and I killed a couple of things. And as I progressed, this giant guy with a big spear came bum rushing me. And I went, "Wah!" And I ran backwards back into the courtyard, and I ran over the center. And I didn't even notice that the center was like some plywood. And as the big bad guy ran after me, it collapsed and he fell down into this pit and died. And which, of course, you know, is probably a cool thing that you're supposed to discover. And discovering in that way without me knowing it was coming was the coolest thing ever. I was like, oh yeah. You know, I have my headphones on in the middle of this like meeting room where nobody else has headphones on and it's totally quiet. I'm sure I sounded pretty silly. But anyway, the biggest difference and the biggest thing I'm worried about, really the only thing I'm worried about based on the half an hour that I played of it, because it really did feel like it scratched that Dark Souls itch, which now I have, is that they said there is no – currently no multiplayer. So the layer of Dark Souls, which for me was really the win, was really what got me into the game, which is that you can bring friends into the game and you can go into your friend's game and bad people can come into your game. And that really wonderful new way to approach multiplayer in Dark Souls doesn't seem to be present here. And I went up to the developers after the demo and said, if I have one wish, it would be that you guys add that. And he said, yeah, well, we hope we'll have the ability to do that. So I hope they have the ability to do it as well. It seems like it would only be a, you know, time and production schedule type of an issue. But I think it's the kind of essential for those games. Right now, it's just a pure single-player experience. And as fun as that could be, I think you miss that wonderful multiplayer layer, that wonderful, like, look what I can do, come and help me if I can't do, all that great stuff that makes Dark Souls for me, at least.
Maybe it was a situation where they were like, well, you know, we can be 80% derivative before we have a lawsuit on our hands. But I'm just kidding.
No, I mean, I get it. I kind of feel like maybe that's a genre now, you know? I feel like it maybe – I mean, I guess you could say it's derivative, but I also feel like I want more of those kinds of games. So,
I do too. I'm not arguing that point. I was just like, wow, you know, the fact that you were talking about one of the differentiating points being instead of a bonfire, it's a floating pile of rocks. And I was like, oh, God.
Yeah. Anyway, it really was. I mean, literally, if you picked it up and didn't know that you weren't playing Dark Souls, I don't think you would think you weren't playing Dark Souls. But I say that in the most loving way I could, because it's, I mean, that's what I want. That's what, you know, that's what I want is more of that.
They're going to call it Dirk Shells and put it on the with this really blurry font and
Dirk Shells. Yeah. It's like the Transmogrifiers. I mean, you go to the store and it looks like Transformers.
Yeah. Transmorphers was the one. I used to manage a video rental store, and Transmorphers was always looking at me. Yeah, back then. But yeah. Oh man, those straight to DVD. Oof.
I guess the other thing that would be different, and I, you know, I didn't play, I only played for half an hour, and I got pretty far. I got to the boss battle, fought the boss twice, and couldn't quite beat him in my allotted time. But I guess the other biggest thing is that when I pressed start, things sort of made sense, which is a big difference from Dark Souls. There weren't, you know, 40 different stats, and there wasn't this giant spreadsheet of statistics. It really was much more clear. And I guess you start the game by selecting a clear class. You have one of three options. You have like fighter, rogue, cleric, I think. And those give you certain spells, and those spells can never change. So it's not like Dark Souls where it doesn't really matter what you start with. You can sort of make your guy whatever you want. I think you can still make your guy to a certain extent whatever you want, but you never get to change those initial spells that you select. So maybe there's you know, more different also, and maybe it'll be a little more approachable for people that found the character creation and the character customization stuff in Dark Souls to be a little off-putting, which I can certainly understand, because it's
it just is that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've always found that game to be quite daunting. And I don't know. I'm not enough of a masochist, maybe. I don't like to beat myself up that much.
Well, I will tell you, Matthew, I used to have the exact same feeling. I was like, you know what? I just have no desire to try this game. And then I was talked into trying it, and I fell in love with it. So it really is one of those things where even if you think you're going to hate it, there's a chance you might love it. And my experience was playing it with someone else and them sort of being my Jedi master, which is a wonderful thing to have. So I was sort of cheating in that sense because, you know, I didn't have to figure it all out by myself. But once I understood how the game worked, I think it gets a bad rap. It's really not that hard, and it really has some wonderful innovations into the role-playing genre. I think it's a really great game, actually.
The control scheme is excellent. The minute-to-minute gameplay, I think that's what is you know, the controls, the amount of control you have over your character sort of mitigates how, you know, getting your butt kicked by a giant demon and having to go back and, you know, redo everything. Yeah.
Yeah. We got lots more to talk about. I played a whole bunch of more games. I'm sure these guys did as well. We're going to have your phone calls coming up in a second. But I do need to thank our sponsor, Squarespace. They are the ones that made this show possible and have made this entire week of shows possible, coming to you every night of E3. We're so grateful for Squarespace, and we hope you patronize their website as a thank you to them, but also as a thank you to yourself, because if you have any desire to have anything on the web, if you need a destination online for any use whatsoever, Squarespace is the best place to go to make that happen. I say that from experience. I say that genuinely as a person who has used Squarespace to make my own website, jeffcanada.com. It's lived there for years and years. I am so pleased to have them as a sponsor because I genuinely love them and I genuinely use that service every single day. It's so easy to create an awesome looking website that looks unique, is interesting, and is easy to update every single day, which is what I do when I update my blog. If you need a blog, if you need a portfolio, if you want an online store, Squarespace makes it so easy. Every website comes with online store services. So even if you don't need it, you have it there potentially. And it's easy to make something that looks beautiful. They have templates, many, many templates, but then you can take those templates and make them your own in the easiest way possible. It's all drag and drop. It's all what you see is what you get. You just slide things around, grab an image, move it here, move something else there. It's so simple. You don't have to have any coding experience, and you can create a beautiful website. But if you do run into any problems, they have online support, live chat and email 24/7. It's great. They're super responsive. It's quick. It's easy, and it's inexpensive. Plans start at only $8 a month, and that includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year plan. So you can get everything you need to start your own website right in one go. You can even try it out for free without even inputting your credit card at any step. So they're letting you go there and check out their services, create your website, see how easy it is without any obligation whatsoever, because they don't even take your credit card. There's a lot of these places that say it's free, but we're going to charge you after 30 days unless you cancel. No, not Squarespace. Squarespace is so confident with their website, that creation tools, that they let you use them for free. And they say, you know what? If you like this enough, you'll give us your credit card eventually. And since you like this show and listen to this show, we're going to hook you up with even bigger discounts. 10% off your first purchase if you go to squarespace.com/DLC and you use our promo code Jeff Sent Me. That's JeffSentme. Doesn't even matter which Jeff on this show sent you. Just say Jeff Sent Me when you sign up for Squarespace at squarespace.com/DLC. We are so grateful for their support, and we hope you support them in return. All right, guys, back to the games. And
yes.
And guess what? We forgot the freaking E3 awesome hype train music again. Zach, drop my beat.
That was awesome.
2 days in a row. I forgot to do that at the beginning of the show. Zach even reminded me right before we went to air. He's like, don't forget the music. What did I do? Forgot the music. But I love that music. It was worth waiting for, right, guys?
I think we could probably play it again at some point.
I think we should.
Yeah,
I think
we should have
played it right after Christian called is what we should have done. But I'm not on the ball today. I'm really running on fumes. We got a whole nother day of this. But I saw more awesome stuff today. I want to talk about getting hands-on with Splatoon. Did anybody else play Splatoon?
I was hoping you were going to bring that up. That is one of the best things in the entire convention. It is amazing.
Oh, sweet. Cool.
It really is. And it plays differently than I thought. It has gyroscope controls instead of using – I mean, the Wii controller has two sticks, so it could just have regular old shooter controls. But no, it does not. It has gyroscope controls, but it's not the kind of gyroscope controls that you usually associate with the Wii U controller where you are holding the gyroscope and looking at the screen on the controller and moving that around. No, you're supposed to look at the television screen and not look at your hands and just move them as a gyroscope, which I got used to actually pretty quick. I thought it worked pretty well.
I sucked. I was not good at that. I pretty quickly turned that option off. And went to the traditional two sticks. But man, what an inventive third-person multiplayer.
It's pretty cool that at least this mode, and I'm assuming that the final game will have multiple modes, but at least this mode, it wasn't a deathmatch, which is what I assumed it was. It's a area control game. It's really who has the most surface area covered with their color splatter ink.
Sounds very Da Blob.
Yes.
That's awesome.
I compared it to the graffiti mode in Tony Hawk.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that aspect of turning into a squid where you use that for two things. One, traversing the map at a much faster pace, as well as basically reloading and picking up ammo, which is your paint, so that you can throw a grenade. And cover a wide area, which can also then help you blow somebody up.
Yeah, I love that concept of you've got this tank on your back that's full of ink, and you're splattering constantly, like this machine gun of ink splatter through this crazy, super soaker gun that you're holding. And that'll drain your tank. But you also have this option of throwing a grenade, and it's not like you have grenades in your pocket. A grenade is just a concentrated burst of the ink that you already have in your tank. So if you use a grenade, it uses up the tank that you're also using for ammo. So you have to – it's just using a bigger chunk of that. So it's a really interesting resource management dynamic, I would say.
Yeah, it really is. And and added on top of that, I'm sure you got as well, where you work your meter up to the point of being able to switch out to a bazooka that just gives a stream of paint that goes as far as it can until it's stopped by something.
Right.
That was very quickly, because you got to play like two matches. That first match, everyone was getting their feet wet.
Right.
But that second match... the strategies, everybody instantly started going, I got it. Here's a completely different strategy from that first match. I'm shocked by how much fun I had at that, because I'm not much of a Nintendo guy anymore. I'm falling off that train. I played Smash Brothers. It's very good. There's no question about it, but it is Smash Brothers.
Yeah. It's a known quantity. Yeah.
Yeah, but man, Splatoon. Did they give a release date on that?
They said 2015, which is a little sad. But I think that the smartest thing they could do, I think, is release what we played at E3. Just that. I mean, I'm sure the game is going to be bigger and have more modes. But if they just released that as a downloadable thing for like $14.99 on the Wii U shop, that would be brilliant. And do it this Christmas when, the Wii U needs some help. I think that would be so wonderful and so brilliant. But I don't think they'll do that.
Directed by Sploliver Splone. Sorry. It sounds really good, though.
Hilarious. Yeah, I was a little worried initially when it was like, oh, it's not about engaging the enemy. It's only about shooting the ground. But it's really cool how that dynamic, that area control dynamic, forces you into conflict with other people, because you're into these choke points where I want my color on the ground. Oh, you're putting your color on the ground. Okay, well, let's shoot each other then. And it's such a wonderful visual representation, because they don't show you the score of the other team at any point. You only see your own score. The only way to know whether you're winning or not is to look down at your mini map and see that overhead view of the color scheme of the map and see who's got the most color out on the board. It's just so clever and so smart and really fun.
So it's not a percentage that it shows you? Like, it doesn't say, oh, your team has this percentage of the map?
At the end, it does. At the very end of match, it'll show you who had the higher percentage. But during the match, it shows you a number, a score. Like, you got 500 points. Now you've got 516 points. Now you've got, you know. So you don't have a sense of whether your score is higher unless you look down and see, oh, well, we clearly have more color on the board than they do at this moment, or vice versa.
That's very cool. It's a good way to handle it.
Jeff, did you you got any other games you want to talk about?
I got a little bit of time with Far Cry 4.
Ooh.
Just enough to shoot some guys from
elephant back.
From the back of a pachyderm.
I know you were a huge fan of Far Cry 3. I think it was your game of the year that year, right?
It was my game of the year. And it looks like one of the most exciting things about this, and actually this is sort of, you know, a theme of the show, I just noticed how many great-looking co-op experiences there were.
Yeah.
And it looks like they're handling multiplayer a bit better this time around. I wasn't a huge fan of the multiplayer component of Far Cry 3, but this has sort of a drop-in. You can drop into a friend's game. You don't have to load into any other menus, and you can just sort of, you know, cause open-world chaos.
You don't even have to own the game.
Yeah, exactly. That's really cool. I think that's a brilliant move on their part, because people are going to play it and then they're going to want to play, buy the game proper, I guess. It's one of the best looking games that I saw at the show. I just love the attention to detail. The gunplay feels good. There really isn't a whole lot other, you know, they're adding some different things to play with, some different toys and tools and different animals that, you know, are pretty interesting, have pretty interesting combat implications. I think it's going to be a solid title. It'll be interesting to see if they can, you know, wow people as much as they did because Far Cry 3 kind of came out of nowhere for a lot of people, I think.
Yeah.
And this time it's going to be a little bit more of a known quantity.
Well, I think that they're doing a smart thing by changing up the venue, the milieu. You know, I think that the Himalayas is such an interesting, visually interesting and sort of grand and picturesque, but also not something you've seen 1,000 times. You know, it's easy at E3 to feel like you've played the same corridor 400 times in one day, because you pop from game to game to game, and it's like, okay, here we are. We're in a random fantasy world. Now we're in a random military shooter, et cetera, et cetera. And then you see something that is even a little bit different, and it really pops out. It really seems to be a place you want to spend time in. And I certainly felt that for Far Cry 4.
Yeah, very much so. I'm very, very much looking forward to that. Honestly, it's funny because, you know, I thought I sort of had shooter fatigue, but there are actually a number of, you know, shooters that are sort of coming out the end of this year and into 2015. You know, Rainbow Six, the new Rainbow Six was another one that I was like, well, actually, honestly, my first thought when I saw that was like, man, I hope somebody takes this engine and makes another SWAT game.
Wow. Yeah.
But that looks like an amazing amount of fun too. Did either of you see Alien Isolation by any chance?
No, Sega is the one place that I didn't manage to find a way to fit into my schedule. So I have not seen Alien Isolation, but I have heard good things about it, and I'm surprised how much people are excited about it, because at least last year, what I saw did not encourage me. So hopefully it has come a long way. But
the fact that it's, you know, they're trying to treat it like a survival horror game instead of a shooter is pretty encouraging to me. But I'll admit to being more or less in the dark about how things are actually, you know, shaping up at this point.
Yeah.
I tried it out. I found myself very lost.
Hmm.
I didn't really know where I was supposed to go. No, you'd think that would have been a good thing, but I really didn't understand what my objective was and where I was supposed to go. I kept
your
somehow
objective is to not get eaten by the alien.
Well, yeah, pretty much.
No, I kept going in circles, and I don't know. Maybe it's just because they really toss you kind of in the middle of it. Maybe once I actually, because no matter what, I'm a huge fan of the Alien franchise. If I'm starting at the beginning, I'll probably be fine. But that demo, I mean, it was literally, I walked up, it was at the Sony booth. I just walked up, started playing it on my own. Nobody was talking me through it. Nobody was giving me any sort of context. And I just couldn't really figure out what was going on. And I thought the controls were a little strange. When you are moving around specifically turning your character, it's not so smooth. There's like a snap to it. Maybe I'd warm up to it, but it felt very strange to me that I couldn't just like gracefully move left to right. It was very much like, okay, I'm going to move right and done. Very, very like jarring almost.
Hmm. Interesting. In space, no one can hear you be graceful, evidently. interesting. Maybe I'll try to figure out a way to get in to see that tomorrow, but I have a pretty packed schedule as it is. Speaking of packed, there's a ton of people on the line right now, so I want to hit a phone call. We got someone here from the 774 area code. What is your name, where you're calling from, and what are you excited about for E3?
Hey guys, my name's Corey. I'm from Massachusetts, and I want to talk about E3 real quick, and I also had a question for you after I make a point there, if that's all right.
Sure.
So the thing that impressed me most with E3, and I think other Jeff was saying at one point, he wasn't a big Nintendo fan either, but the games for Wii U look gorgeous, and I'm not there. I'm not seeing them played in front of me, but based off what I've seen on the stream between Smash Bros., the Yoshi game, and even Mario Kart 8 is already out. The Wii U's putting out some really gorgeous games. Granted, it's not really realistic, but I was really impressed with that. And also, my other quick question is, I'm looking to get an Xbox One, and with the recent price drop, do you think they'll do any type of bundle like they did with Titanfall so you can get almost like a free game with it? Because I'm not sure if I want to wait or just jump in now that there's a price drop out there. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Corey. Let's do the second part first. It wouldn't necessarily surprise me if there was some sort of Sunset Overdrive bundle at some point. I don't think that it will be a Christmas-type situation unless they're really hurting, unless they're really getting thrumped from Sony. I feel like if that happens, it'll be like a early part of next year. And, hey, the big game from the end of last year, we're going to bundle in now. I don't know, but there could be some kind of weird Grand Theft Auto 5 Xbox One bundle. I don't know. I mean, that was at the Sony press conference, so maybe they're more associated with Sony. I don't know. What do you guys think? Jeff, what do you think?
Well, actually, I'd really like to address the Nintendo portion of the question.
Oh, sure. Go for it.
If that's okay. Because I'd sort of expressed, you know, a bit of, you know, I like Nintendo. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I've had plenty of fond Nintendo gaming memories, but you know, as of you know, I guess the past year or two, I wasn't sure. You know, it seemed like they were sort of biding a little too much time in getting some great IP out in front of everyone. And I will say that after their press conference and what I've seen on the show floor, they've effectively sold another Wii U. I will buy one.
Oh wow!
But not until 2015. Because
for Zelda, or for what game specifically will be the straw that breaks your camel's wallet?
Zelda looks amazing. I do the you know, I'm a sucker for the Mario type stuff. So, you know, the Toads, you know, treasure tracker thing looks really good. Yoshi looks great. You know, again, they're really back getting back to putting out a bunch of titles that sort of, it's stuff that I'm looking forward to playing, as opposed to, I think, you know, last year my overall sentiment was, geez, you know, the most exciting thing that I saw on the Wii U, you know, when they debuted it was, you know, the Rayman game. And that was sort of disappointing to me, because I was like, well, geez, Nintendo, you know, they're outdoing you on your own tablet at your, you know, debut of the console. So this is, it's a very encouraging, you know, sort of turn of events for me. I think they have a lot of good content, but it's, you know, it's a ways away.
So. I think you speak for a lot of people. I mean, think the overall sentiment that I keep hearing over and over from people is, holy crap, all of a sudden I'm sitting up and taking notice for Nintendo. And I wonder if that is a function of such low expectations, or if they really figured out some way to play their own game, you know, not jump in, not do the big press conference, do it their own way, show the games in the way that best shows them off, you know, in a way of like really showing gameplay and really getting in there and showing what makes these games special. I spent a lot of time in the Nintendo booth today, and I totally agree with the caller, Corey. I think that there is a lot. Nintendo knows how to art design their games to best maximize their technology. And my goodness, in person, that Yoshi's Woolly World game is just gorgeous. Stunning. Stunning. Yeah, and Smash Brothers looks amazing, and even Bayonetta looks fantastic. You know, I was impressed by that, and that really is playing somebody else's game. You know, that's playing the next gen, you know, mature rated kind of deal. So I think that's absolutely the case, that these games look fantastic and they pop in HD and they're colorful and they're fun and they scream all those things right, you know, right off the top. So what's your take, Matthew?
I feel like Nintendo has an opportunity to do something with the Wii U that they did with the DS or the 3DS. When the 3DS first launched, everyone was kind of eh. The games were even more eh. And we all kind of shunned it. But now, especially walking around the floor at E3, everywhere you look when people are in lines, everyone's got a 3DS. Yeah. It potentially could happen. Smash Brothers is definitely a seller for a lot of people. Mario Kart, for anyone who's played it, is great. But for me, it's just not enough. Because everything that they're feeding to me right now, well, yeah, it's gorgeous. They've got such a great instinct when it comes to like primary colors that they somehow always make those colors feel new to me. But
yeah,
you know, I long for the return of the days where my friends and I can sit on a couch and play games with each other and punch each other in the shoulders and stuff. But I don't think it's actually ever going to come back. It's too hard for me to sit down with all my friends, and it's too easy for me to hop online. And some of those games just aren't the same that way. And they need to give me a little bit more personally. But anyone who says that they want to go out and buy a Wii U now, I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah, they're certainly delivering an experience that's unique to their platform, and I give them credit for that. They've figured out a hole in the market that is only able to be filled by Nintendo. And they've always been good at that.
I think they may. Yeah, exactly. They may end up in another situation where, you know, they are a strong number two, you know, because they, you know, they're a secondary a strong backup console for everyone's primary, because I think, you know, there are a lot of things, like, you know, Mike was saying about the online gaming, Matt was saying about the online gaming. It's like you have to, you know, update your stuff. I mean, I'm excited about their lineup, but I will admit there isn't anything, you know, aside from Zelda, that looks like, you know, they're doing much to reinvent or introduce a lot of crazy brand new IP. I mean, even the Toad's Treasure Tracker thing looks a bit, you know, I mean, it's like, it's another Mario game, ostensibly, from what I can tell. Yeah. Maybe, you know, maybe time will prove me wrong there. But
yes,
yeah,
Splatoon is really the only thing that has that level of freshness. And that doesn't really feel like an IP per se. It's more like a concept.
Right. True.
Yeah.
True.
The other couple of things I was going to mention about Nintendo is I found it interesting that here we have two consoles where their defining characteristics. When you go on the show floor, I played Super Smash Brothers Melee or Super Smash Brothers on both the 3DS and the Wii U. And on the Wii U, everywhere you can play it at the show, you play it on GameCube controllers. And which, you know, that's the defining characteristic of that system is its controller. And everywhere you play any 3DS game on the show floor, it has the 3D slider taped to the off position. There's literally a piece of masking tape over the slider so that you cannot turn, even if you want to, you can't turn the 3D on.
I did not notice that.
Yeah, because I like the 3D. As soon as I picked up Smash Brothers on the 3DS, I was like, oh, let me see what it looks like in 3D. Nope. Taped off with a piece of tape.
Is it because the movement? I mean, because the movement's really fast in that game. I just wonder if it tracks in 3D or if it just does a
but
weird.
No, I'm sure there's legit reasons, but these are ostensibly the defining characteristics of your two consoles. You know, it's controller with the big screen on it, and it's 3D capabilities respectively. And neither of them, it's like their biggest release this year on both of those platforms. It's like, yeah, pay no attention to those features. Yeah. So,
yeah, they instantly feel a little dated. Although I will say the levels on Wii U Smash Brothers, absolutely phenomenal visual quality in those.
Yeah,
it's everything. It's just so rich, and it felt so alive in a weird way, kind of like what we were saying about The Witcher. felt like there was a lot of stuff going on in the levels there.
Yeah, and on the 3DS, there was one level where you get on a platform, and it takes you like flying out and around this bridge, and you're kind of going upside down and around it. And I was like, oh my god, that would look amazing in 3D. Of course, I have no way of knowing whether it looks amazing in 3D, but. We got another call that I want to go. Oh, did you have something to say, Jeff?
Oh no, I was just going to say Nintendo made that decision for you. They're like, nah, that doesn't look so amazing in 3D.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe they did answer that question.
Can I address one thing real quick?
Go for it.
He had that Microsoft question about the possibility of a bundle. Judging by the way that GameStop's apparently, so they say the interest in Xbox One has gone up, I don't particularly see there being a bundle anytime soon because they're definitely taking a loss monetarily on it. But I will say I picked up an Xbox One. While I was thoroughly impressed when I first got to demo an Xbox One last year with the Kinect, I had no interest in the Kinect and I couldn't cared about it. But now that I have one in my apartment, the Kinect on the Xbox One is the selling point for me. And I was honestly pretty disappointed when they cracked under the pressure and decided to take it out. I get it, but if you do any streaming through your Xbox onto your television, the Kinect is amazing. That the voice control and stuff like that is absolutely phenomenal. And I encourage people to reconsider getting the $400 one. It's $100 is $100. If you don't have an extra $100 to spend on something, then don't. That is some games, and I get it. There's definitely an opportunity cost there, and it's what's it worth to you. But to me, I am thoroughly impressed with my Kinect, and I can already say it's changing the way that I interact with all my things. There's times where I go to turn on my PlayStation 3 and I'll say PlayStation on, and then I'll sit there for a couple of seconds and then realize, what the heck am I doing? it's not an Xbox. I can't do that. Well, I get sad that I have to put the controller in my hand.
I think the camera enables voice commands on the PlayStation, although I have the camera and I've never used them, so I can't tell you for sure. But it certainly can't control your television, which the Xbox One can. It controls my TiVo, and I still use it. I'm not as enthusiastic as you are, and I'm not as enthusiastic as I once was. I think I need to get to the point where I can say it and not have to look and see if it heard me. That's the uncanny valley is when I say a voice command and I don't have to go, did it hear what I said? You know, which sometimes it doesn't, you know, and if we get to the point like Star Trek where you can just say it and assume that it heard, that will be when voice commands are really
my favorite common sort of Xbox One misunderstanding is when I'm telling it to watch E, it likes to watch TV.
Well,
and it's like, that, I'm like, I'm already watching TV. E? Yeah.
That is a good point.
Because you have a fiance. That's why you're watching E.
Yes, that is. You could not be more right about that, Jeff. You could not be more right.
All right, there's a lot of people on the line here. I want to get to some more calls. I got a call here from 951 area code. What's your name? Where are you calling from? And what's your E3 topic?
Let's see. My name's Kenny. I'm calling from Northern California. And to me, the biggest thing that I actually seen at E3 was Phantom Dust.
Yeah. Tell me why. Are you a fan of the old Phantom Dust from the original Xbox days?
Yeah, I'm a fan of the original Xbox days, and I didn't see any new IPs that actually captured me. I might as well just go with the old favorites.
Not a bad philosophy. Either of you guys play Phantom Dust back in the day? Because I know I played it, but I must not have played it very much because I certainly don't remember it well.
I never did. I didn't actually have an original Xbox until almost everyone on the floor that I was my last year living in the dorms in college when Halo 2 came out. Then people started sharing their Xboxes when they had two, but all we played was Halo 2. So that's honestly, and Crimson Skies were the only two games I played on the original Xbox. So when they announced Phantom Dust I was there in attendance and people just started losing their minds. I was scratching my head. I didn't even know about the game.
Jeff, did you play it?
Oh, come on. Everybody played a little Phantom Dust in college. What are we talking about? No, you know, I think I may have played it, and this is terrible, but I too did not immediately recall the original game, which is bizarre. But anyway, that's so I'm of no help.
Basically. We have to apologize to Kenny because he's all excited for it.
I'm sorry. No, I think the new rendition of it looks really interesting. I'm excited to play it. But as far as remembering the old one, I'm afraid I'm not.
Kenny, tell us why Phantom Dust was awesome, as succinctly as you can.
Honestly, I never had any gaming experience like that game. It was a fighting game, blended in with a card game, blended in with a somewhat of an open world environment game. So, I don't know. It seems like something kind of special and unique.
Well, I'm definitely excited to see more of the new Phantom Dust. I love me card games. I love real life card games. I love Hearthstone. So you got me there, and I remember that mechanic intriguing me back in the day. But I for the life of me, don't remember much about the original Phantom Dust. Even though I remember seeing it on our shelf when I was living with people. So somebody in our house was playing it, but it clearly was not me. Let's go to 937. Where are you calling from? What's your name? And tell us what you're excited about for E3.
Hi, my name's actually Bowen, and I'm actually from Dayton, Ohio. So I was actually calling in. There was a couple things that I watched a lot of the E3 feeds, and this is more like, I guess, kind of a philosophical question with regards to Microsoft and Nintendo. Microsoft it seems like they're making a lot of, you know, adjustments with dropping the Kinect, and they made the adjustment. Now they released the drivers for the Xbox One controller for PC. There's a lot of things that they just weren't doing initially, and they kept saying, hey, we're not going to do that. Do you feel like that was more indicative of Microsoft being more flexible now, or that they just messed up that badly a year ago? And then I had a second question, and I'll just hop off the air and, then listen to you guys discuss it. But with regards to Nintendo, it certainly seems like Nintendo is, you know, they do these digital conferences, and, you know, I've discussed it with a bunch of friends and everything, and do you guys feel like that almost is, it seems to be displayed that Nintendo seems like they're almost afraid of going head-to-head with Sony and Microsoft, so they kind of want to just stay away from them and E3 and everything, or do you think that that's more because of mistakes that have been made in previous conferences for Nintendo, like when the Wiimote wouldn't work and they were like, hey, it's the cell phones and everything going off and, you know, the language barrier that they always seem to have, so they wanted to make it a better presentation. So those are my questions. You guys could talk about it. That'd be great.
Thanks for the call, Bowen. Those are two excellent questions. I think with regard to Microsoft, that is the central question, isn't it? Was it lack of foresight, or is it wonderful responsiveness? You know, that is something I don't think we'll ever really know until someone, you know, several years from now writes a tell-all book about it or something. I think
Tom Bissell comes back and decides to start writing about games again, he'll get to the bottom of it.
Right. I'm inclined to believe that it's a little of both. I'm inclined to believe that as much as they had a plan for the Xbox One, and I truly believe that they did, I also think that they didn't have – that it wasn't as well-planned a roadmap as it perhaps should have been, and it wasn't so well-planned that they couldn't just scrap all that stuff. They weren't losing any ground by going back. Words, which is disturbing, because you feel like you want them to have a better sense of what they're doing than that. But I also think there is a big contingent of them genuinely being humbled and genuinely going, okay, we got the message. We ticked a whole lot of people off, and Sony came out last year and ate our lunch. And I think that was a genuine feeling of, okay, we better seriously change our policies here because we've just alienated a whole bunch of our core supporters. So I think it's a little of both, personally. What's your guys' take?
Well, in my estimation, it was mostly a messaging issue, in that, you know, all this multimedia stuff and all the apps and all, you know, the TV functionality and stuff is all great. But when you're launching a new games console, You know, the game should always take front and center stage. And so I think, you know, they really just – it's pretty obvious. They just tripped over their own feet in terms of how they, you know, unveiled what they had plans to do. And unfortunately, games until this year didn't really take, you know, the center stage as they should. I mean, that's why people buy these consoles, is to play games on them. Mm-hmm. So you know, I think some of that has to do with things are sort of turning around with Phil Spencer. Sort of, you know, he was involved all along, but I think now that he at least his public statements seem to indicate that he knows that it's got to be a games first sort of attitude and mentality. And I think you're right in the sense that some of that was learned a little later than it should have been learned. Yeah, that's sort of my take on it. I think they're going to have a very strong several years. If they, you know, one of my core takeaways, not just for Microsoft, but overall, is like, this is the most excited I've been to be a gamer in, you know, a few years probably. Like, I'm always excited, but this was sort of like, there were a lot of things at the show this year that I've seen so far and that I want to see that are like, you know, really like, oh, wow, I really can't wait to play this.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff you will be waiting to play.
Yes, and that is also true. Yes,
Matthew.
Yeah, I always kind of had a sense with the way Microsoft ran Xbox the past number of years. They really felt like a businessman trying to tell us what we want. And they got a little too full of themselves there, and we called them on it. And now I think it's had this change with like Phil Spencer, who I think is the best man for the job to take over Xbox. I really think there are a lot of great things are going to happen because of that changeover. But I feel like Microsoft entirely is in the middle of going through that. Now that they have their new CEO, I think we're going to see a lot of things change everywhere, because now, especially with the operating system on the Xbox One, it's going hand in hand with what's going on with Windows and PC gaming. And I think they see all of that. And everything is coming out of them much more respectful. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I said it last night, I think that, or the night before when we were talking about the press conferences, I felt like Microsoft had the eye of the tiger that Sony had last year. And I think it's a direct result of what happened last year, is that Sony had the eye of the tiger that came out and they dropped that mic, literally and figuratively, and Microsoft went, you know what, we gotta change the way we do things a little bit. And a lot can happen in a year. So, but with regard to the other side of the question, the Nintendo thing, I think there's probably a lot of factors, one of which is money. But I love the fact that Nintendo did drop the coin to rent out the Nokia Center. But the reason that they dropped the coin to rent out the Nokia Center wasn't to have a press conference. It was to have this, for all accounts, awesome Smash Brothers tournament with thousands of gamers in it. I wasn't able to go to that, but I've heard from several people who were there and said it was really, really cool. It was an exaltation of gaming and a celebration of the people who were there and the fans themselves. And, you know, kudos to them for doing that. I think the big message that they came out with last year, Nintendo, at their press conference was play the games, you know, right? And they said that, but this year I think they really showed that. It was more their Nintendo Direct was of the spirit of, hey, let's show you the actual fun. Let's show you the fun, instead of what a lot of the, you know, M-rated hardcore gaming side keeps doing, which is not showing you the fun, but showing you the mood. And that's, I think, the rise of CG trailers is, we're going to show you the mood. And isn't the mood cool? It's cool. And, you know, Nintendo doesn't seem to care about cool. They just want to show you fun. And I think people are kind of responding to that, which is really wonderful. So I give them a lot of credit. I think they did a phenomenal job this year. What do you think?
I also think they did really well. You know, again, I think it's them. A lot of this is them sort of, you know, filling a gap with their lineup that, you know, the other consoles touch on but don't really live in that space. And so I think that gives them a really big advantage. You know, as anybody that's, you know, a multi-platform gamer, I'd venture to say that, you know, if you can only, you know, if your plan is to get two consoles, it's going to be, you know, the Xbox and PS4 duking it out, and then, you know, the Wii U is a backup because they've got all the, you know, their own original IP and all this great stuff that you
there's
just,
less redundancy. You
know. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, no one, I don't ever hear anybody anymore debate the three companies. It's always, hey, are you Sony or are you Microsoft? And there's no reason now that Nintendo clearly lives in this different space inside of the gaming community. Why do they have to present the same way? I'm fine with them. Their presentations used to be my favorite. When they announced the Wii U, the orchestra that they had playing and everything was spectacular. I mean, it's a very nerdy thing to say, but it brought tears to a lot of people's eyes. And and so that first time they only did a direct, it made me a little sad, but I get it. And like you were saying, Jeff, they really are. They're showing you what's fun about the games and not that mood. And yeah, I don't think they need to. And yeah. Something that people don't get to see, but on the floor, I feel like you get to experience Nintendo's games at a much higher velocity. Hmm. Everywhere else, you are either waiting to in a very long line to sit down in a very comfortable chair, but watch someone else play a game, or you get to wait in an even longer line to play a game for 5-10 minutes. But at Nintendo, I waited. Man, I don't think I waited more than 10 minutes to play Smash Brothers, which, considering that's like the big thing from them this year, that's insane that you're waiting almost a tenth of the amount of time to play the games. I played a lot of what they had to offer, and it wasn't even remotely time for me to think about eating lunch. And that's a big thing for those of us that get to attend.
They also have 3DSs tethered to ladies, which I always appreciate. So when you're standing in line, a lady whose job is to just be a pretty looking pole that is attached to tethered 3DSs walks up to you.
That's what I call a dongle.
Oh, God.
Okay. Let me transition to another game that I played today, or that I shouldn't. I didn't get to play, but I got to watch someone play, which is, I guess, the point you were just making, Matthew. But it certainly was a lot more than I got to see at the press conference. And this is a game that I have been anticipating a lot because I'm a huge fan of Dragon Age. I completed the first two games, and while they are both flawed in very different ways, I find them to be really underrated, actually, and fantastic storytelling role-playing games. And so I've been looking forward to Inquisition for a while, and I got the chance to have the long half-hour behind-closed-doors gameplay demo. And it looked a lot – it showed, I think, a lot better than what either conference, the – It was at EA, but it was also, I think, did Microsoft show it? Anyway, one of the two big conferences showed it too. And neither time did I think that it showed particularly well. But when you actually get to watch someone play it for a half an hour, boy, it looks great. It captures the Dragon Age feel, but it looks a lot prettier. The environments are really nice looking. I mean, they're not Witcher 3 level, but it's also coming out this year, which is great. But it's certainly a heck of a lot better looking than any previous Dragon Age. What was that?
I was just going to say, does the DNA seem to drift back towards Origins a little bit more? Or is it more two? Well, or is it kind of in between in terms of the combat?
One of the things I kept thinking about when I was watching the demo for that game is how I love the fact – I love the effect that – Skyrim's enormous sales have had on the industry
because
any role-playing game that comes out now has to live in a post Skyrim world, and world is the key phrase here. Now all these games are their giant open world. And the phrase that I keep hearing with all these games is if you can see it, you can go to it. And it used to be only Bethesda games were like that. and now all games are like that. Certainly the first two Dragon Ages were not like that. And it's cool that this is going to be a big open world with much more to do. It's got crafting and stuff. So it's got its own DNA. But I definitely think combat-wise, while the person demoing it certainly seemed to play in a very hack-and-slashy kind of action combat way, they also showed a much more robust pause and assign commands, which 2 also had, but I felt like they had stepped back from where 1, where Origins was on that.
Yeah, agreed.
I think it's a much more prominent, viable way to play. And I like Dragon Age. I like the fact that in most role-playing games, you start and you make a selection of what class you're going to play. And then like 15 levels down the line, you're like, I kind of wish I'd picked a mage. You know, but in Dragon Age, you make that selection and you go, oh, well, during combat, I'm going to hop over to the mage and play as the mage. And oh, if I like this more, I just always play as the mage during combat if I want to, you know. So even if your player character, the leader of your group, the spokesman for your cutscenes, isn't a mage, if you want to play as the mage or the dwarf or the rogue, whatever, you do that, you know, hop over to that or play all of them and assign them roles. So I really dig that franchise, and I'm really, really excited based on what I saw.
Do we know how many maximum party members we're getting this time?
I think it's four. Okay. It looked like four. But there's definitely a bunch of potential party members, as there usually are.
Sure.
So you can constitute your team in a whole variety of ways. And they showed, you know, they showed a real big chunk of gameplay with interesting quests and, you know, fun dialogue options and a really cool looking open world where you can wander around and, you know, pick the flowers and craft things and do kinds of stuff that you weren't able to do in previous dungeon.
Flower picking is the best.
Yeah. Flower picking, man, for the win.
For the win.
Let's go to another call. We have 858 on the line. Where are you calling from? And what's your name? And
what do you want to talk? Hi, I'm from Los Angeles. I didn't get to make it to E3 this year, so I've been watching the stream.
I just want to take a second and say I am so overjoyed right now because we are on, what, episode 25 of DLC, and this is the first female caller we've had call in, and I'm so just so overjoyed. So welcome. You achievement unlocked. You have that distinction. So what did you want to talk about?
Well, I guess I have to talk about girl stuff, right? it is what I called about, actually. I wanted to ask what you guys thought about, you know, the news about Assassin's Creed cutting female characters and what it might say about the industry as a whole.
Yeah. Great question. Thank you for that. Jeff, I know you are a huge Assassin's Creed fan.
I am, yes.
Tell me, and you're also the kind of person that stands up for what you believe in a lot, which I always admired about you. So tell me your take on this.
Yeah, this is sort of a tough one for me because, you know, on the one hand, and probably the more important of the two hands, you know, it's a big, expansive series, much beloved, you know, male and female players, and you know, it has been a largely male-centric or entirely male-centric protagonist situation. You know, they've had some female characters you could play in multiplayer and all that sort of stuff, and that's great.
And they had the Vita version, right, had the female protagonist.
Correct, yeah. which is also great. In terms of, look, you know, when you look at the other side of the coin, which is, hey, you know, I want to tell a specific story, and these are the parameters of my story. I don't necessarily think that, you know, as bad as this is, I mean, as much as I'd like to see a female protagonist in an Assassin's Creed game, I don't feel comfortable saying that it's Ubisoft's obligation to do it. I will applaud them all day if they go that road, because I think there's a lot of interesting storylines and a lot of interesting things you could do, and you know, the opportunity to play as someone other than a dude would be great for everyone.
Well, I think the central issue isn't even the fact that their single player protagonist is a male. It's that in multiplayer, you do not have an option to play as a female, whereas you can play as multiple different males. There's all these different male versions, and the real thing here, and I might get myself worked up into a rant here, and I apologize in advance, but I think that it is appalling that the blindness to this issue is so prevalent that they literally had no media savvy response to the question, that they were so unaware that it was even a thing they should be interested in, that the tone deaf response to the question was so clearly unprepared, unrehearsed, and unthought about, that what the designer said when asked why are there no females in the game, he said, oh, well, we were working on them, but it was too much work, so we took them out, which any moron would understand is a terrible thing to say. Right. Even if it's true, you don't say that. And the fact
a game that size and scope, that's to say something like that in the grand scheme of things is ultimately a ton of crap. I mean, they may have made a decision like, hey, we don't want to spend the resources on this, but
which we should talk about this, the decision in and of itself. But I'm even saying that over and above that, I think it's indicative of the fact that they didn't even think about it. They didn't even think that it would make a difference, which is the worst commentary I think you can say about this whole thing. That just saying, oh yeah, well, we didn't feel like we're doing that work, or nobody would miss it. It's like, it's, you're so blind to the fact that a large portion of your fans are women, and it doesn't make any friggin' sense. Like, I don't know. The decision is one thing. The messaging is even worse, I would say. But
yeah, I agree that I don't feel it's anyone's obligation to include specific minorities in games. But that has to be defended with whether or not the decision makes sense for the story. And granted, we don't know beginning to end what the story exactly is, but I don't see any good reason why the story couldn't be exactly the same, if not be benefited by playing as a woman. And I'm one, and I think the majority of gamers out there have absolutely no problem with playing a female character, and not just a character who happens to be a female, but a female character where you're dealing with problems and internalization that is a little bit more more in line with female problems, and interesting. An interesting character, and not just, you know, a character that's walking around with a female body.
Well, I would even push back a little bit on both you guys on the idea of there's no obligation to include, you know, other minorities. And I would say it's not that there's an obligation. It's that if you are marketing a product to the public, why would you not want to? And the entire intention of your product is to invest yourself in an avatar that will play as you. Why would you not want to allow large sections of your potential buying public to project a version of themselves into your game? Why would you want to limit that experience? Why are you so myopic in your view that you don't recognize that people enjoy that?
I think it's
so stupid.
I totally agree. That's why I say, like, if you make that decision to be so narrowly focused, there has to be a story reason there. If there's not a very good reason, especially when you're dealing with something multiplayer, you have to give the option. It's insane to me.
Yeah.
And then, their message back was just, that's dumb. And anyone, I've not only worked in game journalism, I've worked in games at actual studios and publishers, and enough to know that's a bunch of crap. There's other decisions that could have been made. If they thought that was too much work, there's other stuff that probably very well could have been cut or something. And to also say, like, for them to say it's expensive, because maybe I'm remembering things incorrectly, but I thought that was also something he said, that it was too expensive. Come on. It's Assassin's Creed. They knew how much money they were going to make on Watch Dogs. Ubisoft has got to be sitting on piles of cash, because I know I've certainly given them tons of money. I know lots of other people have given them lots of money. There's no good reason. And Assassin's Creed is certainly popular with women. There's no doubt about it. To alienate like that, and then to have the gall to respond like that is just, it's a shame. Yeah. It's a shame that had to happen, and it's a shame that has to lay over E3. It's a very exciting year, and it's a shame that we have to talk about something like that. But, I mean, we have to.
Yeah.
But it's a shame that exists in the first place.
I think in this particular situation, it was a bad situation in that they didn't even think about it, you know, including a female character in any real way, or that it would actually be meaningful to people, or that it would even come up as a question, which is bad enough in and of itself. But when they got asked that question, the response should have been, you know, we really should look at that sort of thing a little bit more. To be honest, we hadn't been considering it in the way that we should, and it's clear that people are interested in that sort of an experience. So,
yeah,
you know, yeah. I mean, that's what you do is you, you know,
show sensitivity.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, and you know, have a mea culpa. It's like, you know, if yeah. if you were legitimately ignorant to what your fan base is, you know, really wants to see. Admit that and move forward. I mean, you've got a lot of people that love your games. Like, don't, yeah. don't.
Well, no maybe next week we'll have Mark Edding from Marketing on, and he can explain the marketing decision behind
that. Well, I mean, marketing-wise, though, too, like, one of the best Assassin's Creed games you play as a woman. Liberation.
Yeah. I did want to talk about one of the most exciting games that I saw today. I got a chance to do the behind-closed-doors big, long presentation for The Division at Ubisoft.
Oh, I'm jealous. I am very yeah. jealous.
Yeah.
So I just have one question before we get into that, and that is, what platform are you going to play on? Because I want to play with you. Yes. That game is going to be so good.
It is going to be so good. It really is. I don't know. I reserve the right to make that decision at a later date, but we'll let's keep in touch and figure that
out. Yeah, I respect that decision.
This really feels so much like a third-person shooter MMO, and one that I think will really work in an interesting way. And those scratch so many of my itches right there, because I love MMOs so much. First they showed the section of gameplay that we all saw at the press conference, but they talked through it and explained certain things that were going on. And then they showed reaching that same place at a different time at night and from a different direction. So it was really interesting and using different skills. And the most fascinating part was that they really showed a glimpse into what the skill system is going to be like. And it's awesome. It's awesome. It's very much in this sort of new wave of games like Transistor there's another one that I had in my head that where it's like you get the skills, but then you get modifications to them. So you start having, it's not just a skill tree where you're selecting down a skill line. It's these, Diablo 3. So you're making a situational loadout of your skill system and modifying skills in ways that work for particular use cases. So, you know, you can say, okay, I want to equip this grenade, but now I'm going to make this grenade be a flash grenade, and I'm going to add, you know, a lengthier stun effect to it. Or you can say, I want this to be a frag grenade, and I want to add, you know, a fire to the frag grenade, whatever it is. I'm making those up. Those weren't in the demo. But, you know, it's that kind of thing where what happened in the demo is that the character looked at his wrist, and it was like this cool radial loadout system of all these different skills that you can unlock and that you can equip. So you can go, well, in this situation, I want to be much more of a support character, or in this situation, I want to do much more damage based on your teammates and what you have to accomplish. So that was particularly exciting. The fact that there is true loot, and I watched someone loot something that was a blue item. So, it really is an MMO in the sense that you're leveling up, you're acquiring these skills, you're getting new equipment. The person looted a bag that afforded them not only more carrying space, more carrying capacity, but also more ammo capacity and an added bonus if they used a particular skill. So it was a skill-specific buff that you would put this kind of item on if you liked using that skill. So, I mean, it's very much an MMO style game, and yet you're doing covers and you're shooting dudes and you're taking down enemies in a very, you know, Gears of War-y kind of third person action way. So I love the marriage of those two game styles, and up close watching it at length, that engine is unbelievable. Unbelievable. There's so much detail in what they're showing in that version of New York with, you know, fluttering physics on all kinds of cloth and little bits of detritus everywhere. And it's just such a vibrant, amazing, beautiful world that you're going to blow the hell out of with all your weaponry.
Well, it's funny that you say unbelievable, because is it really that believable? Because we all know Ubisoft kind of, unfortunately, has a bit of a stigma when they first showed off Far Cry 3, and then what we got, while still, yes, being an absolutely amazing game, it was also my favorite game of that year.
But Watch Dogs as well.
Yeah, Watch Dogs. And Watch Dogs still, ultimately, overall, still looks very, very good. But it is not what we were shown. And they have a history of that. And to me, The Division really seems to be that, like, that bar raiser, that new benchmark in visual stuff. But, like, some of the stuff they do show in that engine, I want to believe it so much, but I'm trying not to get too excited, because it is, of any game that's coming out in the next couple years, that is the game that is most on my radar. But that stuff of, like, snow building up with the wind and stuff, that is an incredibly memory intensive thing. Can they actually pull that off?
The Division is one of those games where, really, like, for example, to compare it to The Witcher 3, I know is probably going to be pretty close to as amazing as I think it is. The Division is a game that I really, really deep down hope is as amazing as I think it might be. Like, because I mean, Witcher is more of a known quantity, but man, that is definitely up there with, the stuff that most excited me at the show.
Yeah, I was really impressed with the game. I mean, I watched the game being played, but of course, who knows if it was just the worrisome bit about that is that they showed the same bit of what is supposed to be open world New York from two different perspectives, right? So it's like, well, is the rest of open world New York built, guys? Or did you just build this little part? And now when you try to build the rest of the game, we have to make some compromises. You know,
it's an open world. It's just a very tiny open world.
Yeah. You know, because they presented it as it's going to be really cool, because we're going to show you the same place from two different angles and two different times of day. And it's like, oh, that's cool. And then you think, well, is that because that's the only place you could show us? Or, those are those unfortunate worries that you have to have. That's a great point, Matthew.
It is, there's a lot going on there lighting wise though, that is at least presenting something that you do not often see in a demo, that does, suck up some resources. So there's at least a little hope there.
I've never seen better smoke. I'll tell you that the smoke in that game was, it looks like real smoke. It's amazing. We're almost getting to the end here. I want to work through the last few calls that we have. The guys have been waiting a long time. I think we got our old buddy, Matthew, on the line. Are you there, bud?
Yeah, I'm here. I just wanted to bring up Codename Steam, the new 3DS game that Nintendo announced tonight. From what was described of it, it is, I guess, somewhere, but it is, I guess, a mix of Fire Emblem and Valkyria Chronicles. It's a turn-based RPG, I guess. Again, it's a turn-based SRPG, and it's like Final Fantasy Tactics or whatnot, but from a third-person perspective and some kind of shooter element. I was kind of getting a bit of an XCOM vibe-ish from the way they were talking about it.
Well, I've just looked it up because this was news to me. Codename Steam, developed by Intelligent Systems, due out in 2015, turn-based strategy game, set up like a third-person shooter. Moving and shooting takes away from your turn points. Interesting. I will definitely keep my eye out on this one, because that sounds like a wonderfully outside the box concept. And I love turn-based. I'm a big fan of turn-based. So great call as usual, Matthew. Thank you for the info. Let's see. We also have 413. You are on the line. Where are you calling from? What's your name? And what do you want to talk about?
Hi, I'm Nate. I'm from Massachusetts. I'm really interested in two RPGs that are coming out in the next 6 months or so. First is The Witcher 3, which I know you've talked about a lot. I'm also really interested in Dragon Age.
Mm-hmm.
So that is like the game I'm looking forward to most this year. You said you got to play it, right?
Well, I didn't get to play it. I watched it played. I was talking about that, I don't know, about 20 minutes ago on the show. So did you miss that whole talk? I'd say it looked very, very good.
Yeah, what I wanted to know is the gameplay. Are they still having the pause and tactical combat? Because that's what I really loved about those games.
Yes, they definitely showed that. They showed a sequence where, you can do it at any time, obviously, but traditionally in Dragon Age games, and it continues here.
I do it during the cutscenes mostly.
Yeah. One of the sequences that they showed that highlighted this feature was that they came into a room. There was going to be a big battle. They knew that was going to be a big battle. They paused the game. You can independently move the camera around wherever you want. The game is in full pause mode, and you can assign different characters to do different things. So they had this one mage, battle mage, that was in the back of the enemy party. They assigned one of the characters to go up and freeze it so it would stop its ranged attack at them. Then they had another character that was this big bull looking guy, why can't I remember the name of that race in that game? Whatever. Who came down to the choke point. There was like this choke point where the bad guys would be running up. And since he was much more of a melee, you know, sort of tank type character, they placed him there to prevent people from getting to them. Then they had another character, you know, start shooting arrows from the back. And they set that all up, positioned everybody in those places, and unpaused, and it started playing out. And it was really effective and really cool. Another sequence that they showed was a giant battle with a dragon. And the one cool thing that is added to this Dragon Age is there is positional targeting. So you can target the dragon's hind leg or its head or its tail. And so they showed it. It was really, first of all, the dragon looked awesome, and it would swoop down and it would smash into the side of a building and get to a perch and shoot fire and then swoop down and land. And they managed to take the health meter of one of its legs down to zero, and then it sort of collapsed and was limping on that leg, and then it took off and flew because it had a bad leg, and it landed and it kind of slid sideways. And it was really, really cool and dynamic, the fact that it, you know, actually reacted to the fact that it no longer had the use of one of its legs. So all that was really cool, and it made the action combat system look awesome. But yeah, you could definitely still pause it. We got another call on from 412. What are you calling from, and what's your name, and what do you want to talk about?
Hey, this is AJ from Pittsburgh. I actually got to go to one of Best Buy's Smash Brothers events that they had tonight, so I got a little slice of E3 in my hometown. I know, Jeff, you mentioned you played both versions, and you talked about how you had the GameCube controller. And I'll say, having played a lot of Smash Brothers since, like, you know, the original, it's probably for the best you played it with that, because it's just so weird playing it on not a GameCube controller.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I don't disagree, and I think that's the best way to show it, and I like the fact that they've come out with this peripheral that allows you to plug four GameCube controllers into a Wii U. It just seems odd to me that their flagship product for the year is completely ignoring the one thing that sets that console apart from any other console. That's all I'm saying.
I totally agree. The ultimate thing comes down to is I now know so many of my personal friends who are literally buying a Wii U to play Smash Brothers, and I think that just they need that Trojan horse, because once they have that system, they'll buy Yoshi and Kirby and, you know, Toad and everything else that's come out in the last 2 years. So it's probably a smart move to get the hardcore in there, at least, even though it doesn't use the gamepad.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be really interesting. The key number that I'm going to be keeping an eye on with the Wii U is attach rate. And they have the potential between Mario Kart, with Mario Kart and Smash Brothers, is to have a true one-to-one attach rate. Because it's like, who owns a Wii U and doesn't own one of those titles, you know? What do you guys think of Matthew?
True.
I mean, really, Trojan horse is a great way to refer to that thing. Those games are your gateway drug to other games on that console.
Killer apps, man. Killer apps. Yeah. we've kind of lost that concept of the system seller game because so many third-party games come out on both these systems, and there's just such a breadth of things to play on Microsoft and Sony's consoles. But Nintendo really still has the concept of a system seller down pat because they've got basically one game coming out, and so it better darn well sell systems. So yeah, and we've already seen, you know, supposedly the sales for the Wii U jumped dramatically when Mario Kart came out. So it'll be interesting to see. Hopefully they have a strong year with Smash Brothers, and I certainly think the potential's there.
Yeah, I'm skeptical, but I certainly I don't want to see Nintendo go anywhere. I want to see Nintendo thrive until the day I die.
Yeah. All right, guys, let's wrap this up. Is there any other games that you want to mention, or what's the best thing that you've seen so far? Jeff, why don't I go to you first?
Well, I mean, I think Warner Brothers lineup is just ridiculously strong. You know, Batman Arkham Knight and Witcher 3 are both looking really, really, really good. I think
and
though,
Mortal Kombat.
Oh yeah, looks great too. I mean, yeah, they have a really even the I didn't really see much of Shadows of Mordor, but people have been saying good stuff about that too. So it's they have a really strong lineup. Honestly, the three I guess that I'm probably most excited about are Witcher 3, The Division, and Far Cry 4. You know, I mean, I could go on and on and on. Honestly, there's probably I could make a list of 10 games that I'm dying to play, but that's
I can't let you go without doing at least an indie game quick hit. I'm shocked I haven't heard you mention No Man's Sky yet.
Well, No Man's Sky, I didn't get a chance to. I mean, I've seen the trailers and I've seen the media on it, and I've been following it, and it's on my sort of most anticipated. I mean, it's like, you know, it scratches the same itch that Star Citizen is going to eventually when it comes out a million years from now. But it's that level of exploration, that seamless flying from planet to planet, up into the atmosphere, out through space, landing on another planet. The fact that everything is randomized, you know, every planet is sort of unique, you know, randomly procedurally generated, if you will. It's the way that it all fits together based on everything that I've seen so far. Yes, that is up there.
I
up
figured.
There, up there, up there. Yes.
I mean,
the fact
scared.
That it's being made by Hello Games is ridiculous. I mean, that's such a small team. It looks so good.
Yeah, that's why that game worries me. I feel like it's a breeding ground for potential bugs all over the place.
Well, I'm just worried that the hype is getting so tremendous. And I wish nothing but the best for those guys. They seem like really genuine dudes.
Absolutely.
I hope that they don't create such a high expectation that there's a backlash if it doesn't live up. But what about you, Matthew? Is there any other?
Yeah, I mean, I will say I got to play Batman today, and while it is good and it definitely feels like Batman, I'm a little at a loss for words as to why it's next gen only. It does look gorgeous, but. Verdict is up on that. Although they did say it not only got delayed, they really don't know when it's going to come out next year. There is a lot of work left to do on that game, so it could dramatically change quite a bit.
Wow. So is it more a function of the fact that the Rocksteady Batman games always looked amazing and this didn't really have anywhere else to go?
They looked great, but if you've got, you know, it's a next gen only game. You expect that bar to jump a little bit, not a little bit, a lot of it. And it didn't seem to do that, but I don't know. It's not like I got to run around the whole city. It, you know, Gotham may be absolutely gigantic. It may get really subterranean. It may get really tall. It may be wider. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I shockingly do not put that in my top stuff from what I've seen. For me, number one goes to Evolve. Number two goes to The Order. Number three, probably Splatoon because I was just so surprised by it. Number four, awesome. Though, we haven't talked about this. Tales from the Borderlands. Telltale.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Coming out again. It's phenomenal. It really felt like a really fresh kind of look into Borderlands. Awesome. It's very funny. The voice acting was fantastic. And there's a lot of little nuance. There's little things there for people who are hardcore fans of Borderlands. The first time they're driving out in the world, they run over a skag. And if you're a big fan of the franchise, you know that that's kind of something that they do a lot. Is they really they love to just throw you in there with someone with a skag getting run over. But they also like the menu system looked like it was lifted straight out of the game. And cool. So there's a lot of little tiny details that I think fans are going to really appreciate. And great. if you're like me, I adore Telltale. I think they're wonderful, and the space that they've created with storytelling and experience in the game is incredibly unique, and this is falling right in line with what they've done with The Walking Dead that everyone can agree is great, and arguably the even better Wolf Among Us, and this seems like it's going to be perched right on top there. They're on a streak, and it's not showing any sign of slowing down in my eyes.
Well, you're not going to get any argument from the two Jeffs, I would imagine. We're both big fans.
No argument here, no.
Oh, I'm excited to check out. I have an appointment at Warner Brothers tomorrow, so we'll be back tomorrow, or at least I will be back tomorrow. I appreciate both of you guys hanging out tonight, and I know you had long days on the show floor, but I really appreciate you both hanging out and sharing your insights tonight.
Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, of course, Jeff. Anytime, man. Anytime I can be here, I will.
Well, why don't you tell people where they can keep up with your stuff if they're interested?
Well, it's a recent thing. I just kind of came out and said it at the start of E3 that I'm no longer with the Indoor Kids podcast, which is where most people know me from. I'm working on something new. Can't really talk about it yet, but a new podcast should be coming out for me, hopefully around Comic-Con. But in the meantime, follow me on Twitter. It's just at Matthew Burnside, Burnside. And I don't know, hopefully I'll make you laugh.
Awesome. Jeff, what about you?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter as well, at Jeff Mattis. And keep an eye on Narcosis. That's the game I'm doing VO for. It's probably a year off, but we'll be having we'll bob and weave and do pop up, do a little media thing.
Well, I got a very early preview of that game, and I did a video of it. If you want to see that, it's on my YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/KanataJeff. That's with two N's and one T. It really impressed me, and I got a chance to play it with the Oculus Rift and everything, so it was really cool.
No, thanks for saying so. It's been a lot of fun to work on so far. We got a lot of game left to build, but it should be a lot of fun.
Awesome. Well, thank you all. Great calls tonight. Thanks everybody who called in and hung out in the chat room. We will be back tomorrow for the final day of E3. It'll be at that same time, 7 p.m. Pacific time. If you can be here with us, we'd love to have you hanging out. We'll wrap up this puppy. We'll check out all the rest of the games that we can possibly stuff into the timeline and get you all the impressions that we possibly can. But until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.